Welcome back to A-E-I-O-U, a podcast about Austria. This is Thames Darwin. At the core of the conflict of the Habsburgs in Bohemia had been the rejection by the Bohemian nobility of Habsburg rule under Emperor Ferdinand II. When the defenestration of Prague occurred, Ferdinand was not yet emperor. He had been the Archduke of Inner Austria since 1590, and in 1617, he won the crown in Bohemia when his cousin, Emperor Matthias II, prevailed upon the Bohemian nobility to elect him their king. As we noted in the last episode, Matthias had been a weak emperor, particularly from the standpoint of the Catholic Church, which thought him too lenient with Protestants. Ferdinand had come to Prague to lay down the law, so to speak, but in the end, it was the Bohemian revolt that was his reward. As the revolt was underway, Matthias died and Ferdinand acceded to the imperial throne. However, back in Bohemia, the nobility that had previously elected him now refused to recognize the legitimacy of his reign. They elected an alternate king, Frederick V of the Palatinate, a state along the Rhine River. In response to Frederick's election, Ferdinand responded by invading the Palatinate. While Ferdinand was ultimately victorious, the war became truly international. The reason why lies in something called the Spanish Road. Although ruled by the same family, Austria and Spain's paths split permanently in the 1550s, when Emperor Charles V divided his holdings between his son and his brother. Almost immediately thereafter, the Netherlands, which Spain had received in the property division, had rebelled against Spanish rule. The Spanish Road was a key supply line by which the Spanish army supplied its troops fighting in the Netherlands. Because the Palatinate was nearby, all the European powers with a stake in the war between Spain and the Netherlands, including England as an ally of the Netherlands and France as the regional rival of Spain. England would never enter the war directly, and France would not intervene right away, but the die had been cast for further international involvement. The first major intervention came, however, from Denmark. Having successfully pushed Frederick from power in the Palatinate, other Protestant monarchs of German-speaking imperial lands feared receiving the same treatment, even though they had not intervened in Bohemia or the Palatinate. Among the Danish royal holdings were imperial territories in northern Germany, which to the Danish king Christian IV justified his direct intervention against the empire. The imperial army led by Albrecht von Wallenstein was ultimately able to fight the Danish to a draw by 1629. Sweden's turn came next, with its king Gustav Adolf intervening for largely the same reasons as the Danish king Christian had. When the treaty between the empire and Sweden was signed in 1635, it marked a major turning point in the war overall since it essentially ended the fighting among the German-speaking states. Finally came the turn of France in the same year. For the final 13 years of the war, France fought primarily against Spain and the empire. When the war finally ended with the peace treaties signed in Westphalia, the main changes were the following. The religious settlement first devised in 1555 with the Peace of Augsburg was expanded to include Calvinists. Moreover, Sweden and France were both made guarantors of the imperial constitution, creating a sort of security arrangement that would, it has been argued, set the stage for European diplomacy for the next 100 years. Thanks to these guarantees, writes the historian Michael Hohkedlinger, the Reich now became a focus of European power politics and a center of gravity of the European state system. End quote. In terms of imperial territory, the empire's realm was largely unchanged. Emperor Ferdinand II had died in 1637 and been succeeded by his son as Emperor Ferdinand III, who also became Archduke in Inner Austria and Lower Austria. Ferdinand III had concluded the Peace of Westphalia, after which he continued the Counter-Reformation in Austria and ruled as his predecessors had in Bohemia and Hungary. As emperor, he occupied a throne whose future was unsure as a result of the war. When Ferdinand died in 1657, his son Leopold inherited the imperial throne as Leopold VI, as well as the thrones of Inner Austria, Lower Austria, Bohemia, and Hungary. With the death of his distant cousin Duke Sigismund Francis of Further Austria in 1665, Leopold consolidated the rule of all Austrian territories back into a single hand, his own. On the matter of foreign affairs, Leopold's energies were divided between his two main rivals, France and the Ottoman Empire. To the west, France, ruled by Louis XIV since 1638 and confident with its emergence as a major continental power in the Thirty Years' War, sought to expand its influence into regions where the empire still held sway. Multiple wars fought through the 1670s and 80s resulted in the formation of the Grand Alliance, under which Leopold was joined by the leaders of the Netherlands, England, and Spain in a coalition to contain France. Nevertheless, fighting would continue throughout the remainder of the century and into the next, with the most momentous conflict being the War of the Spanish Succession, on which more later. To the east, the Ottoman Empire had repeatedly tried to make incursions from the Balkans into Transylvania and further into Hungary. A major diplomatic victory was won by Leopold in 1664 with the signing of a peace treaty with the Turks at Vasvar in Hungary. Leopold acknowledged Ottoman rule in Transylvania, but it was a small price for him to pay to free his hand to fight Louis XIV. Although the treaty held for nearly 20 years, in 1683, much of Christian Europe was back at war with the Ottoman Empire. In July of that year, the Ottoman army lay siege to Vienna for 2 full months. However, with the help of troops from Poland, the empire was ultimately victorious, breaking the siege and defeating the Ottomans. It was the last attempted expansion of the Ottomans further into Europe, though they would remain until the 1920s. From this point forward, the Habsburgs would begin expanding further into Hungary. In terms of domestic affairs, Leopold's reign was a mixed bag. On the one hand, in 1663, he transformed the legislative nature of the empire by establishing a permanent diet at Regensburg in Bavaria, rather than the periodically convened diets that had been the imperial tradition until that point. And let's bring in Florian to tell us the name of this new diet in German.
Immerwährender Reichstag.
Thank you, Florian. Under this new, permanent legislature, the Archbishop of Mainz would serve as Arch-Chancellor of the Empire, akin to today's Chancellor in Austria or Germany or Prime Minister in the UK or Spain. The monarchy had greater ability to impose the taxation necessary to fund its centralized military. Via this permanent diet, Leopold and his Habsburg successors would consolidate their power. In this way, Leopold sought to follow the lead of Louis XIV, King James I of England, and other monarchs in Europe in establishing absolute rule. Absolutism normally meant the subordination of other powers to that of the monarch, whereas James and Louis could bend the nobility in their countries to their will or declare themselves heads of the churches within their country and actually act in that way. Leopold specifically and the empire generally found absolutism to be a heavier lift. For one thing, the nobility in the empire were also heads of state, with their own armies, legislatures, and institutions. For another thing, as the state leading the Counter-Reformation, the empire had a closer relationship with the Pope than virtually any other country. In other domestic matters, as a vehement champion of Counter-Reformation and Catholic hegemony, Leopold perhaps overplayed his hand in Hungary against the Protestants there, giving rise to bad blood. This was on top of the anger already felt by many of the nobles in Hungary on the basis of Leopold having made peace with the Ottomans. The anger following the Treaty of Vasvar was so great that a conspiracy arose to oust Leopold from power in Hungary. But the conspiracy was discovered and its leaders arrested and executed. In addition to his trouble in Hungary, the negative aspects of Leopold's rule affected Austria's Jewish population, which Leopold expelled from an area of Vienna where they had lived for decades, renaming the area Leopoldstadt. The relations between the Habsburgs and Jews living within the empire had never been particularly good. And this episode represents a rather low point in those relations. It would remain for future generations of Habsburg rulers to improve the lot of Jews both in Vienna and throughout the Habsburg monarchy. A final point to make for this episode is that the period after the Thirty Years' War, for which Leopold is the most consequential emperor, marked the emergence of the Habsburg monarchy as the standard-bearer for Catholicism on the European continent, whereas, back in the late 15th century, the title had been decisively held by Spain. Spain's star had fallen by 1650, and its consistent economic and military woes made it a poor key ally for the Vatican. More problematic was France's relationship with the Holy See. On the one hand, France rivaled the empire for being the strongest Catholic political entity in Europe. On the other hand, Louis XIV was a staunch adherent to Gallicanism. That is, he believed that Catholic Church power had to be subservient to the civil power of the monarch. In this specific context, it made sense to the Vatican to throw its fortunes with the Habsburgs, who were not asserting such privileges, at least for now. There is one thing we haven't yet discussed that many people associate with the Habsburgs, and that is their tendency to engage in cousin marriage. This tendency resulted in a high level of inbreeding among the royal family. This fact would finally have grave consequences for the family in the early 18th century. That's what we'll discuss in the next episode. Thanks for listening.